Hello, and welcome to the audio edition of Beastly Business, the first in a series of animal behavior, human-animal bond mysteries, written and read by Myrna Milani. Chapter 10. After McCarthy concluded his millionth repetition of his great plan for me to bake cookies and wait to hear from him, he finally allowed me to leave. I felt so pleased with my freedom as I drove home, I happily hummed along with Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony on Vermont Public Radio for several miles before my thoughts began to interfere with my enjoyment of the music. These took many forms, but centered around two concepts. First, McCarthy's relationship with Douglas DeWitt, my knowledge of which I never mustered the courage to discuss with a dispassionate consultant himself. My new partner definitely struck me as the kind of man who wouldn't hesitate to sneak a peek at the contents of someone else's mailbox. At the same time, he wouldn't hesitate to ask one of his law enforcement pals to swoop down and arrest someone who did. The rest of my thoughts concerned my very strong feeling that, until McCarthy found his goat, he'd devote minimal time to the more serious canine crime at hand. Consequently, if I wanted him to find out who killed Monica, I had to focus all of my efforts on finding that goat, too. "Anything happen while I was gone?" I casually asked my house sitter as I greeted the pets. "Not a thing," smiled the pleasant young woman. "The place was quiet as a tomb." Once I unpacked and attended to the usual post-seminar paperwork, I turned my attention to McCarthy's goat. "Where would you hide a goat on Somerset Lake?" I asked Maddie, who was swatting the canary's cage while the canary, as usual, observed him curiously but without fear. When the cat didn't answer, I picked him up, rubbed his ears, and dropped him to the floor, where he immediately ran over to Elizabeth and swatted her. While she chased him around the center chimney barking ferociously, I summoned an image of the lake and the surrounding area for possible goat havens. The goat's a pygmy, so aside from any inconvenience with not being housebroken, it could be kept anywhere a medium to large-sized dog could. I raised my voice so I could hear myself above the canine racket. Thoughts of dogs plus the goat's previous laundry room habitat immediately yielded the three most obvious and hardly surprising possibilities. The cottage is rented by Douglas DeWitt and Jeff Weintraub, and the Winthrop's journey's end. "So all McCarthy needs to do is to break into three houses," I told Teresa, who solemnly hung on my every word while the other two pets cavorted. "You have any idea how to do that?" She looked crestfallen. "It's all right," I fondled her hairy gray ears. "I don't know either." I leafed through Bed Bath in Barcelona for helpful hints, found no method that didn't require plastic explosives or having sex with strangers, and spent several hours making repeated but futile attempts to unlock my front and cellar doors using the few credit cards I owned, just to see if I could do it. Having exhausted my total knowledge of criminal breaking and entering, I made a mental note to ask McCarthy to show me how it was done. Then I went to the post office to see if Joe could supply me with any useful information regarding the habits of my possible goat nappers that I could pass on to my reluctant partner. "I can't believe I'm doing this," I told the pets who accompanied me on the fact-finding mission. "I must be losing my mind." Teresa, who always rode in the front seat beside me, sedately thumped her tail in agreement, while Maddie reserved comment and stoically surveyed the passing scenery from his perch on the headrest above her. Elizabeth yawned and lounged on the back window ledge like the superior dwarf canine goddess she believed herself to be. Meanwhile, I tried to draft a plan that would get me the information I wanted, an endeavor that proved both fruitless and unnecessary. "Yo, Cinny," Joe hailed me as soon as I entered the post office. "You coming to the big doings on the common tonight?" Joe correctly interpreted my dull expression, thereby saving me the effort of having to ask him to what big doings he referred. "Big get-together for the lake people and the natives," he filled me in. "Eleanor and t'other ladies thought it'd make 'em feel welcome. Get 'em to come back again next year." Although I couldn't think of anyone staying at Somerset Lake I particularly wanted to come back next year or any other year, the news cheered my newly evolving criminal mind. Give me the details. I dusted off and flashed Joe my social butterfly smile. Runs from 6 till 10, picnic, softball for the grown-ups, games for the kids, concert by the town band. Joe rattled off the list that described practically every summer event in the county. Everyone will be there, even St. Somerset and the missus, he concluded with a mischievous chuckle. St. Somerset? I couldn't imagine anyone in the area I knew worthy of that title. Young Winthrop. Joe gave me a conspiratorial wink. Some of the locals call him that because he's so full of himself since his old man gave him the lake house. Knowing that everyone in town intended to congregate somewhere normally would have induced me to spend the time reading a book somewhere else. But today it evoked a quite different image. What better time for McCarthy to go goat hunting than while the occupants of Somerset Lake's possible goat havens attended a gala weenie roast miles away. Anticipating McCarthy's delight when he learned he could safely break into the homes of the primary goat-napping suspects that very evening, I called him the instant I got home. When he didn't answer, I told myself he must be in class and hung up. There was no way I was going to leave a message on his answering machine proposing my breaking and entering scheme, any more than I'd send him an email that did likewise. Every hour in the hour until mid-evening, I tried to reach him with no luck. When I hung up the last time, I decided I had to take matters into my own hands. This could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get into those houses and find that goat, I told the pets as I pawed through my bureau drawers. I can't let it pass up just because McCarthy's off gallivanting again. I put on an old black turtleneck and dark slacks, then completed my breaking and entering ensemble with sneakers I'd rubbed with potting soil to blunt their whiteness and light-reflecting logo. Following another unproductive attempt to reach McCarthy, I went down to the basement to look for some breaking and entering tools. How about a medium-sized screwdriver, a pair of pliers, a penlight, and a tack hammer? I asked the cat. They all seem to possess criminal potential. The cat yawned. I tucked these implements into my pockets and went back upstairs. However, the hammer poked me painfully when I moved, so I decided to leave it behind. As my plan slowly crystallized in more detail, I located a small metal box, filled a plastic sandwich bag with kibble, and stuffed these items into my pockets along with everything else. This made me look peculiarly lumpy, so I put on a bulky, dark blue cotton sweater for added camouflage. When I get back, we'll celebrate with some cookies and frozen yogurt. I promised the pets, who observed all this with accusing, "You're not taking us with you, are you?" frowns on their furry faces. Following one final, futile attempt to contact my elusive partner, I left the house. As I began my trek to the lake, I took care to stay hidden in the woods to one side of the road. Although theoretically my attire would make me invisible once it grew dark, until then any remotely sober or lucid person who saw me in that getup would certainly remember me. Well, no, I didn't see any burglars, I easily imagined anyone interviewed by the police saying later. But I did see that strange Dr. Upton, and she looked very furtive and lumpy, like she was hiding something. That, in turn, would bring the police right to my doorstep where they'd see, what, a goat? The missing report? McCarthy's letter to DeWitt? I hadn't a clue what they'd see since I hadn't broken into and entered anything yet. Still, it didn't seem like a good thing that the police should find anything from DeWitt's, Weintraub's, or the Winthrop's house in mine. By the time I arrived at the lake, I felt fairly comfortable, if somewhat hot and sweaty, in my new outlaw role. I still even liked my latest plan, which eschewed crass breaking and entering in favor of standing outside the dwellings in question, rattling dog food in the metal box, and making goat noises in hopes of attracting the missing ruminant. If that didn't work, well, I'd worry about that when it happened. As I furtively crept through the woods toward DeWitt's cottage, fate gave my plan the finger. Even from a distance, I could see the flickering light of the television and hear the roar of a raucous crowd being egged on by a screaming announcer. Ditto for Weintraub's. Even if the two men didn't know each other personally, they shared the same taste for reality shows blasting at them with eardrum-shattering volume. I slinked on by and retreated to the shore path before pausing to consider my options. Go home and forget the whole thing. Some inner presence sensibly urged me. No way, I easily rejected that proposal. I've invested too much time in this to quit now. Even if Journey's End is the least likely goat hideout, just eliminating it will help McCarthy. However, once I actually stood on the front porch of the Winthrop summer home, my plan rapidly fell apart. It began when I rattled a tin of dog food, and three cats and a large shepherd mix I'd never seen before came running out of the woods before I even had a chance to make my goat noises. They looked at me so longingly, I gave them all the food. Feeling my already tenuous grasp of the criminal mind rapidly evaporating, I began to case the joint, seeking a way to get inside. As I stumbled in the dark down the slope toward the back of the house facing the water, I wondered about the origins of the verb, to case. Did it have something to do with casement windows, perhaps? That seemed like a dead end because I didn't think the lake houses had basements, the logical place for a casement window. But Journey's End did have a basement, because some long-dead Winthrop had built the house into a steep hillside overlooking the lake, and the back wall of its foundation was partially exposed. I couldn't believe my good luck when I cased the only two casement windows present and discovered one of them unlocked. When I beamed my tiny light through the opening, it weakly illuminated a sturdy table directly below. Once in the basement, sweeps of the pale beam inadequately revealed a large, finished room with a collection of fitness equipment taking up most of one end. I easily imagined Pamela Winthrop in her designer tights and leotards doing 100 sit-ups without sweating on the quilted mat currently rolled up in one corner of the room. That so depressed me, I aimed my meager light toward the other end of the room. This looked much more like a normal basement with its assortment of garden tools, old dress form, and boxes of odds and ends. No goat evidence there, either. I was just about to extend my search to the first floor when I heard a car pulling into the driveway at the side of the house. I started to say something quite unladylike, but it turned into a squawk when somebody grabbed me from behind, stuffed me through the window, and hissed, "Run!" You've been listening to an excerpt from Beastly Business, an animal behavior and human-animal bond mystery written by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, books on animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavioral and bond sites, check out my website at mm@mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the book Beastly Business in any form are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music in The Steppes of Central Asia by Alexander Bordin is used with permission of Katova Arts, www.katova.com.